Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Live from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's the Smash Brothers. Robbie Stanley and Adam Vingan. With the latest on your Nashville Predators, this is Smashville's best sports talk.
On ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into the Smash Brothers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's a beautiful Friday here in Nashville, Tennessee. Robbie Stanley alongside the great, the beautiful, and the talented Adam Vingan here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Adam, what's going on, my man?
Only one of those adjectives is accurate, and I'll leave it up to the listeners to guess which one.
Wow. Only taking credit for one. I thought you'd at least do two.
I'm a humble man.
You are. So you are a very humble man.
I will
man.
Let the listeners decide which of those three adjectives accurately describes me.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and give you credit for all three, because that's what I feel like we do here on the Smash Brothers.
You know how I feel about verbal affirmation.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Well, Adam, I think it would probably be inappropriate for us to begin this show any other way, and we're going to get to a bunch of hockey talk today. Mike Kelly is going to join us from The Point Hockey and break down some things analytically, including a case for why Roman Josi should be the Norris Trophy favorite, so stay tuned for that if you're a Predators fan. But also, you know, it's been a pretty tragic week in our area. Tornadoes moved in late Monday night, early Tuesday morning, and there was just a ton of devastation in North Nashville, Germantown, East Nashville, Benton County, Putnam County, out towards Cookeville suffered the worst damage. I mean, it's just been a pretty tragic week here in our area. And it was one of those things where, you know, I got home from the game Monday night after an 8-3 drubbing the Edmonton Oilers gave the Nashville Predators. And, you know, I had to wake up the next morning and do morning drive. And I was just kind of settling in, looking at the weather. And we knew storms were coming in. We knew that it was raining really hard. We knew that it could be severe. But I don't think anybody had any idea that it was going to be as powerful and as dangerous as it ended up being. What was just kind of your reaction when you're going to bed, you know, Monday night, early Tuesday morning, and you wake up the next morning and just the devastation all around our area? It was tough to see.
Yeah, when I left the arena on Monday evening, it was still clear outside.
Yeah.
It wasn't until after midnight that the storm started entering our area, and from where I live in the Gulch, I just thought it was a normal thunderstorm. Saw some lightning flashes. There was some rumbling, but I didn't think anything of it. The next morning, when I woke up, you know, my wife and I were looking at pictures of the devastation that occurred in those neighborhoods you mentioned, North Nashville, East Nashville, and Germantown, and it was uncomfortable, and it was really upsetting to see just how much damage there was in places that we often frequent.
Yeah.
There were a few buildings in East Nashville, for example, that we had gone to a couple days before that were no longer standing. That day, Monday morning, before I went to the arena for morning skate, I went to my dry cleaners, which is located in Germantown, and picked up my dry cleaning. The next day, it didn't have a roof.
Yeah.
And it's been inspiring to see just how much this city has rallied around its own. You and I have talked about this, and I'm sure those who follow me on Twitter saw it yesterday. My wife, Bridget, had the brilliant idea of sort of crowdsourcing or crowdfunding for supply runs.
Yeah.
And at first we thought we would raise $300-$500 maybe. At the end of it, including some of our own contributions, we raised more than $4,000.
That's so awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. It, you know, everybody who contributed, whether it was $5, $10, $100, $50, we even had some people donate more than that. It was incredible, and it was over the span of about 5 hours. And yesterday, Bridget and I first started putting that money to good use. We spent nearly $700 on supplies and brought them to North Nashville. And then we also made a $1,000 donation to the Community Foundation, which I know has been receiving a lot of support and is a great resource if you're looking to donate to the cause. Yep. The Community Foundation is, in my opinion, the best option that you have. And Bridget and I are going to continue to buy supplies and make donations, and you can keep up with that on my Twitter. I'm going to keep everybody apprised of where the money is going, because so many of you were so generous with your money, and making sure that people who have been gravely affected by this natural disaster can get back up on their feet. So thank you again to everybody who participated. But we've seen it in the local sports community. The Tennessee Titans, I believe, donated $1 million.
Yeah.
The Sounds made a sizable donation. I believe Nashville SC made a sizable mm-hmm. donation. You're wearing your Nashville Strong t-shirt right now.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure those who watched the game last night saw all the players arrive to the game wearing them. The coaching staff wore them on the bench. The broadcasters wore them as well. And you can buy those shirts at the arena or at NashvilleLockerRoom.com with all of the proceeds going toward tornado relief, easy for me to say. So the Predators are doing their part as well. So it's been great to see how this community, in just a short amount of time, is doing everything it can to rebuild as soon as possible.
Yeah, and I want to commend you and Bridget for having that idea and having the foresight to do that. Yes, I understand. I was trying to give you a little bit of credit. But it really was all Bridget. She's brilliant.
Yes.
She's much smarter than you and I.
Yeah, so that's why she's about to graduate with a master's.
That is correct. And she is much smarter than myself. My wife is much smarter than the two of us as well.
Yes.
And we fully understand that. That's fine.
We can live with that.
But I also want to just, I guess, spread a word of thanks to the community as a whole. I mean, obviously, this is a situation that nobody ever wants to go through. Nobody ever plans to go through. But unfortunately, it happens. It's not the first time our community has had to go through something like this. You know, I was here back in 1998 in East Nashville when a similar situation happened. A tornado hit in East Nashville, and it was very destructive. It was one of the earliest memories I have from my childhood. I was 5 years old at the time that tornado came through in 1998. So I dealt with that before. Obviously, the floods in 2010 were catastrophic here in Nashville as well. And the way the community rallied behind each other during the flood, I've seen a lot of the same things here. I mean, I was just looking on Twitter today. You know, there are areas like, you know, Mount Juliet out in Putnam County that was probably hit the hardest from these storms. I think it was an EF4 tornado in Putnam County. They've got too many volunteers is basically what they're saying, which is a great problem to have. But they're basically like, yeah, we're pretty much all set in terms of the volunteers that they've had. And that does not happen everywhere. I think that's something that this community and this neighborhood and our area in general in Middle Tennessee should be very proud of. And I want to commend our listeners because I know a lot of you have been a huge part of that. You've donated financially. You've given of your time and your effort and your blood, sweat, and tears. Some of you listening may have lost things and maybe lost loved ones in the tornado. So it's been just a rough week for our community. It has been awesome to see the way our community has responded. And I think, you know, just from being around the Predators yesterday, they wanted to make sure they came out last night and gave the city something to cheer about. And they were able to do that with a big win over the Dallas Stars, which we'll get to in the next segment. But, you know, the involvement around the league from the Blackhawks and the Wild, I think the Panthers were involved as well. St. Louis Blues, Dallas Stars, a bunch of different teams, including the NHL itself. It's been really nice to see the response that the league has had and different teams around the league have had to this tragedy.
And the players spent their off day on Wednesday at the Community Resource Center. They brought as many supplies as they could in their cars and then spent the afternoon there helping the volunteers organize all of the supplies that were donated. And you could tell talking to the players yesterday morning how much that experience meant. I was particularly struck with Matt Duchesne, who took it incredibly hard for someone who has lived in this area for less than a year.
Yeah.
We know that his affinity for Nashville is well known, but you could sense the pride in him living here based on how he was talking about his experience at the Community Resource Center and the number of people who were giving as much as they could and volunteering their time to help those in need. And that was the sentiment that was echoed by every player that we talked to who spent their Wednesday afternoon at the Community Resource Center.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I tweeted this out last night during the game. I had somebody tell me yesterday that they saw Pecorine come into a store and basically just looked around and was like, okay, what is needed in terms of donations? He went to a store. He bought up every single flashlight in the store. I think Colton Sissons might have been with him as well. A Predators official confirmed this story to me last night, but bought up every single flashlight in the store and donated those for tornado relief. So that just kind of shows you what I think we've already known specifically about Pecorine, but I think about these guys in general. I mean, sports, a lot of things we get on here and we talk about, you know, guys not playing well, doing all these different things. But at the end of the day, something like this happens in your community, and all of those things seem really small. Like, I don't know about you, Adam, but it was kind of weird to watch the game Tuesday night and really get all that opinionated about it one way or the other, just because, I mean, at the end of the day, does it really matter? Like, that's just kind of what I was battling through on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It was hard to watch the game with any sort of focus.
Yeah. But, especially given everything we'd seen that day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so just a tough week for our community, but, you know, they've responded in the way that I think we always knew they would when unfortunate circumstances come about, and that's with a lot of generosity, a lot of love for each other, and we're certainly happy to be a part of this community here on the Smash Brothers. When we come back, it was a big win last night for the Nashville Predators. We're going to dissect it and look ahead to a big matchup tomorrow against the Dallas Stars. You're listening to the Smash Brothers on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Back to the Smash Brothers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan with Robbie Stanley, as always, here on Friday evening in Nashville. The Predators return to action tomorrow afternoon, 1 p.m. against the Dallas Stars. You can hear that game right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, pregame at noon, puck drop at 1 tomorrow against the Dallas Stars. But of course, the Predators played the Dallas Stars last night in a game that had several implications, not just in the standings, but of course, as we discussed in the previous segment, you know, an emotional game, an emotional backdrop for this game, the Predators' first home game since the tornado that ravaged Tennessee, multiple tornadoes that ravaged Tennessee earlier in the week. But the Predators put together a solid performance. They defeated the Stars 2-0. They were in the playoff spot for about an hour and a half,
yep,
maybe 2 hours, before the Minnesota Wild defeated the San Jose Sharks and I think jumped four teams into the first wild card spot. So the Predators are out of the wild card position as of this moment. A lot of games tonight that will impact that race. We'll get to that later, I'm sure. But Robbie, when you looked at last night's game a little bit closer, what stood out to you, to me? Special teams played a gigantic role. Mm-hmm. They scored two power play goals and killed off four Dallas power plays. We know how bad the special teams have been here this season and last when you think of the power play. So we learned that when you have good special teams, you usually win.
Yep.
And the Predators did that last night. What other aspects of the game stood out to you when you look back at it?
Well, I would agree wholeheartedly with the special teams. That's not a battle they've won very often this year. The penalty kill, it seems like to me, is starting to get better. It's starting to trend in a better direction, as evidenced by the fact they've been in dead last in the penalty kill pretty much all year, and they moved up a couple spots in the last few weeks. Now, some of that has to do with the poor play of the penalty kills behind them now, but certainly a good sign the last two games specifically against Minnesota and Dallas that their penalty kill is trending in the right way. I just thought they looked in control last night. I mean, there's not very many games, especially recently, where you felt like the Predators were in control pretty much the whole time. And they weren't out there just peppering Anton Khudobin. I don't want to make it sound like that's what they did, but I felt like, you know, they spent significant time in the offensive zone, certainly more time than they have in some other games as of late. But when they got there, it felt like they were threats to score. Like Matt Duchene broke into the zone a few times, and other than scoring the goal that he redirected on the power play, 5-on-5, he was dangerous a few times. I mean, Craig Smith was dangerous. Nick Bonino had a glorious chance in the slot. Forsberg, I think probably the least dangerous chance he had all night was the one he actually scored on. I mean, it felt like the Predators were putting a much heavier emphasis on, number one, keeping the Stars out of the middle, and number two, trying to get to the middle themselves. And you look at the quality chances and the high danger chances, they're not going to blow you away from last night, but it just felt like they were in control. And Matt Duchene talked about it a little bit after the game. He said, you know, they felt like they were dangerous, and they haven't felt that way very often this season. Now, was it perfect? No. Was there still a lot of different things I think they could have done better? Sure, absolutely. But I thought it was a step in the right direction. But the thing is, we've learned this year. We've had how many times have we had the conversation of, okay, now you got to build on it, and they haven't done it. It's difficult for me to expect that all of a sudden they're just going to build on it and continue to play better and better and better as the rest of the regular season closes out. But certainly, I think it was a nice reminder that when this team is playing to its capability, or at least closer to its capability, they're still pretty effective in the ways they go about winning a game.
And to give you a sense of those numbers that you're talking about, we're going to speak to Mike Kelly of The Point Hockey in the next segment.
Yep.
And according to SportLogic, which is the company that he works with, the Predators had 5 minutes and 47 seconds of offensive zone possession time last night compared to 6 minutes and 20 seconds for the Dallas Stars. The Stars won the slot shots on net 14-8. The Predators had 3 scoring chances off the rush to Dallas's 2. So Matt Duchene was interesting last night. You touched on it about how he thought they looked dangerous last night and how that was as close to what they're supposed to look like as we've seen in a long time. And I talked to him a little bit more about it today, and he said that he thought they looked last night like they did in the beginning of the season, when they were able to put teams on their heels a little bit more. He also mentioned that they were quite poised last night. He said that's perhaps the most poised they've been in the game and the best puck movement they've had in the game.
I would agree.
All year. And then he followed up today with me by saying that he thinks their performance last night was perhaps top five if you rate the regular season games this year. And of course, we have 60-plus games, so I'm not going to go through them all, so I'll take his word for
yes,
it.
Yes.
But if he feels so strongly, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But you know, one thing we'll talk about later in the show, and one thing we've talked about quite a bit over the past few weeks, is their star players performing. And last night, they get a goal from Philip Forsberg, his first goal since January 30th. He did not score at all through the month of February. That's 16 consecutive games without a goal.
Not much of a February this time around.
No, not this time around. Also, of course, with his career goal number 164, he passed Martin Erat for third on the Predators' career list. Those players have no connection to each other whatsoever. But it's good trivia nonetheless. Matt Duchene scored on the power play as well, tipping in a puck past Anton Khudobin. That was his first goal, I believe, since February 15th. So we talk about the special teams, we talk about the puck movement, we talk about the poise, but two of their high-priced, most important offensive forwards scored last night, and that's good. You can't discount that importance. And now, of course, as you mentioned, it's all about continuing to do that And we've had so many conversations about whether the Predators can use a big or impressive victory to launch themselves upward, and most of the time they don't. So I will believe it when I see it.
Yes.
But I thought all that we saw, it was not a perfect game last night. This was not a clean 60-minute game. But I think it was as close to one as we've seen in a long time, which counts for something when you consider where the Predators have been this season.
Yeah, I would agree. And look, I mean, now Dallas has lost, I think, four games in a row. I think they're 0-2-2 in their last four games. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they play again tomorrow on the road at Dallas. I would expect, if you're the Predators, Dallas is going to come out and they're going to try to jump all over you in that game. You know, Rick Bowness, their coach, was talking after the game last night and was basically saying, you know what, like, they didn't go to the middle of the ice. I mean, it was their high-quality chances, in his opinion, were pretty much non-existent. He called it a very easy game for UC Soros.
We've heard that recently.
We have heard that recently as Monday from John Hines. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what the response looks like from Dallas tomorrow, especially being at home. It's an afternoon game. Ben Bishop will be in goal. I'm sure the crowd there will be into it. There's a rivalry developing between the Predators and the Stars that I think is really cool for the league. But if you're the Predators now, it's all about, okay, build on it. Like, do something with it. Because it doesn't do you much good to win that game yesterday and then to come out tomorrow and just get shelled. Because then all of a sudden, the same questions we've been asking all season long and the same conversations we've had all season long, they creep back up then. So we'll see what they do with it tomorrow. I did think it was interesting to hear John Hines after the game, where he was talking about Duchesne specifically, and he said, you know, I kind of like the way he's been playing as of late. He's been harder on the puck. He's been, you know, the effort has been there to try to produce offensively. He's tried to do the right things in spite of not being productive offensively, which can be, I think, a challenging thing for forwards who they're used to being productive. They've been productive their whole careers. When the points aren't coming quite as easily, sometimes you're trying to do so much offensively that other parts of your game get sacrificed. I think John Hines feels like Duchesne has done a much better job of playing better regardless of whether or not the points have come as of late. I'm not sure I always agree with that assessment, but I do think last night was probably the most noticeable game Matt Duchesne has had in a while. I mean, I think he drew a couple penalties last night as well, which he's, I think, probably the best Predators forward on the team
he
at doing
is.
That.
He leads the team in penalties drawn.
Yeah, so I think a really positive step, and we talked last week, Adam, it's probably unrealistic to expect all four of those big four forwards to figure it out at the same time for the rest of this year. I mean, you're just running out of time for that to be the case. But we both said probably be happy if two of them get it figured out. We'll talk about Forsberg a little bit later, but maybe it's Forsberg and Duchesne, the ones that may be separating themselves from that group a little bit.
Right. Because when you look at those four players, I think the and the other two being Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson, I think the one whose decline in production is easiest to explain is Victor Arvidsson.
Yeah.
He is not getting chances off the rush or getting to the dangerous areas of the ice at anywhere near the same rate that he did last year. And that may have something to do with the injury that he suffered earlier this season at the hands of Robert Bortuzzo. And Ryan Johansson, I'm sure we'll talk to Mike Kelly about that in the next segment, so I'll defer to him on that one. But if it's Forsberg and Duchesne, you know, it's something. So if those two can get going, if Johansson and Arvidsson continue to struggle or take a little bit longer, it's not helpful, but, you know, two is better than none at
this
point.
Yes, it is, because they've spent a large portion of this year so far with none. So if you can get some sort of consistent production out of one of those guys, two of those guys, I mean, that's better than you've had on a consistent basis anyway for the most part of this year. So I think if you're the Predators right now, you'll probably take that. Real quick, I think everybody's going to make a big deal about three-point games this time of year. To me, unless you're playing Minnesota or Chicago or, you know, one of those teams, Winnipeg, that's right next to you in the standings, probably don't care much about that. Just get points any way you can. If you go to overtime tomorrow against Dallas and you lose, probably not the end of the world, in my opinion.
No, because that would mean 3 out of 4 points
right.
against
I mean,
Dallas.
You'll take that
Stars,
every time.
Which is not a bad thing. Coming up next on the Smash Brothers, We will talk to Mike Kelly of The Point Hockey, a great analytical mind. He will share his statistical perspective.
He's kind of a genius.
He is. He is quite intelligent. He will offer his statistical perspective on the Predators on the other side of the break. This is the Smash Brothers on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to the Smash Brothers on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Adam Bingen and Robbie Stanley in studio. And on the phone, one of my favorite hockey people, Mike Kelly. You may know him from The Point Hockey. Does a great job with statistical analysis. He lets me bug him all the time, so that makes him a saint in my eyes. And he was kind enough to join us on the line. Mike, how are you?
Hey, well, thank you for the kind words, and happy to do it. How are you guys doing? I'm great.
We are doing very well. We wanted to start our conversation with the Norris Trophy. It seems to be ordained, perhaps, that John Carlson will win the Norris Trophy at the NHL Awards in June. But, Mike, you have been one of the most vocal supporters of Roman Josi as the front runner for the Norris Trophy. So just based on your statistical analysis, what stands out to you when you compare Roman Josi and John Carlson and why you believe Roman Josi should be the front runner for the Norris Trophy?
Well, look, you're talking about two great defensemen here, obviously, right? And I think sometimes when you say, hey, I think this guy should be the guy ahead, people might get on you and, well, what about the other guy? And take nothing away from John Carlson. He's had an unbelievable season, and if he wins it, you know, good on him. That's great. But, yeah, I don't think enough people are talking about Roman Josi. And I'll tell you why. It's because I think that he impacts the game in a way that no other defenseman does in the NHL this season, and in incredibly meaningful ways. So you want to take a look at some numbers. What's Roman Josi bring to the Nashville Predators? He can generate offense. We know that. He's a great skater and can move the puck up ice really well. So, you know, if you look at the amount of times he exits the puck from his defensive zone, there's only one guy ahead of him, and that's Thomas Chabot. You look at the amount of times he skates the puck into the offensive zone, there's nobody even close to him. He's done it 341 times, and Chabot second at 230. So what we're talking about here is a guy who transitions the puck from his own end into the offensive zone at a rate that no other defenseman is even close to. And that's an incredibly valuable asset to have in any player, but in a defenseman, obviously. So package that all up, skating the puck end to end. He's done it 146 times. Tied for fifth with Connor McDavid, best of any defenseman in the league. He is an elite transition player and puck mover in the NHL. When he's in the offensive zone, he's got the puck on his stick more than any other defenseman in the league. This is part of the reason is his great skating, where he can obviously be elusive and take pucks to the net and find open teammates. Leads all defensemen in scoring chances. He's second to Zach Werenski in goals and second to Carlson in points. So, for me, when you package up all these key elements, and the other thing, too, is that he's not a liability defensively at all. When he's on the ice, the Predators do very well. So you package all of this up, and to me, it's clear cut. This is the guy, this is the defenseman who has the greatest positive impact on his team and of any defenseman in the NHL. And then you want to go to something kind of simpler to look at what it all manifests itself in. He's the leading scorer on the Predators by 18 points. 18 points. So you hear people talk about things like that with Panarin in New York and how many more points you have than your teammates as Hart Trophy, reasoning. If the Predators get into the playoffs, people like to use that for the Hart Trophy. Roman Josi should be in that conversation.
Well, certainly he has carried this team through most of the season, while most of their star players have disappointed. But, Mike, now we have 26 games of sample of the Predators under John Hines. Of course, they fired Peter Laviolette exactly at the halfway point of their season after 41 games. But 26 games, I think, provides a strong enough sample to start looking at the differences in the Predators' game between the two coaches. Based on your statistical analysis, is there anything that stands out to you that the Predators have done differently under John Hines than they were doing under Peter Laviolette?
Well, John Hines may be a goalie whisperer. I can't confirm that or not, but the goaltending's definitely been better in the time that he's been there. And that's benefited Nashville, obviously. You look at the special teams, and they're kind of the same. I know, big win over Dallas, and the special teams were good in that one game, but not a huge difference there. They're not scoring nearly as much under John Hines. And if you go a layer below that to the more process-related elements of the game, like what kind of chances are you creating and how many chances are you creating, et cetera, it's not good either. So offensively, I think there's been a fairly significant dip in the Predators' ability to get to the critical areas on the ice and produce good opportunities and ultimately score goals. I see a little bit of that from the process standpoint. Defensively as well, not as good. So if you ask me to evaluate, has this team, independent from goaltending, played better under Laviolette or Hines, I would lean towards Laviolette. And, I know Nashville's back in the playoff race now and, certainly right in the mix for that wild card spot or one of the wild card spots in the West. But from a process standpoint, I think they've taken a step backwards in the time that John Hines has been here. Just the goaltending, again, has been much better than it was earlier in the season.
Mike Kelly on the line with us here on the Smash Brothers on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Mike, Ryan Johansson has been a very popular topic of conversation locally. This season for the Predators is not having anywhere near the productive season that I think most people have expected from him. When you look at his numbers analytically, statistically, 5-on-5 the last few years, he's been a big-time driver of the Predators' offense. What do his numbers look like this year, and how would you evaluate the impact that Johansson has had on the Predators this year?
Yeah, good question. And, even going back to last year, you look at usage, so just, how much he's playing. He's playing less, about a minute and a half less a game, and at even strength. Talk about coaching differences, just to get back on that for one second. There's a couple differences with John Hines over Peter Laviolette in terms of deployment. Like Rocco Grimaldi's playing more. Philip Forsberg playing, considerably less. So there's some deployment differences there. But Johansson's another guy. He's, again, not playing quite as much at even strength. He's not starting in the offensive zone as much. Some of these things are going to impact his overall numbers. But he's still a guy that's a very good playmaker, very good passer. In terms of rates, he's doing some of these underlying things that contribute to scoring chances at similar rates. He's just not out there as often. The other thing, too, with him is that he's not a great, puck mover necessarily, but when he has the puck in the offensive zone, he can be dynamic. But he's not getting into those critical areas quite as much either. So you package that all together and you're going to see a little bit of a dip, but he's a guy that has been in the league for quite some time. And I think everybody understands what his strengths and weaknesses are. So he can yo-yo a little bit, but that's kind of what I've seen from him so far this year.
Mike, Matt Duchene, the Predators and Matt Duchene have been linked together for what seems like a decade almost. I mean, it was like David Poile trying to chase his white whale that he finally got this past offseason when he signed him. I think a lot of people would say the production has been a disappointment this year. When you watch Matt Duchene play, not only this year, but in his career as a whole, what kind of stands out in terms of the way he drives play offensively 5-on-5? Because I think from a possession standpoint in the past, maybe hasn't been as dominant in that area as I think most Predators fans would probably assume he has been.
Yeah, and if you look at, last 10 games, whatever, even, like I said, for a lot of time under John Hines, the Predators as a team, they get shelled often enough in terms of possession, if you're talking about it in terms of, shot attempts and scoring chances and all that kind of stuff. So he's a byproduct of that a little bit. But again, he's another guy that if you go back and look at last season at the minutes he was playing when he was split between Ottawa and Columbus, and he's about 2 minutes less at even strength per game from where he was last season. And, you know, again, he's such a dynamic offensive player, and he can have these great stretches where, you know, he can put up points and on any given night be a top player on the ice. But that's another guy that, again, he's not getting into those critical areas, be it passing or shooting, as often, partly, again, because of the minutes that he has at other points in his career recently. So you look at last season, I mean, he was so good in Ottawa. He scored 27 goals in 50 games. I think he finished with just over 30, 31 goals, something like that, on the season. And he scored 70 points, which tied a career high. But he's been in the league, what, 11 or so years now. He's had 70 points a couple times. It doesn't make him a 70-point player. And, you know, even a 70-point player isn't an elite centerman in the league in terms of point production. So I think, you know, he's coming off such a great season statistically. If you want to hold him to that as what the benchmark should be going forward, then you're probably going to be a little bit disappointed, I guess. But, you know, again, he's another player who's got such great offensive ability and can be the best guy on the ice on any given night. It's just, I guess it depends what you expect from him in terms of whether you'd be disappointed or not from what you've seen so far this season. But yeah, not as good as last year at all.
Mike Kelly from The Point Hockey has been our guest here on the Smash Brothers on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Mike, thanks so much for taking the time to come on with us today, man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Enjoy the rest of the season as well.
Thanks, Mike. Do the same. When we come back, we're going to wrap it up for the show today. We're going to talk about Philip Forsberg. Can last night's goal that went in be enough to get him moving in the right direction? We'll talk about that next. You're listening to the Smash Brothers with Robbie Stanley and Adam Vingan here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into the Smash Brothers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Adam Vingan taking you through this Friday night. It's a big one for the Predators tomorrow against the Dallas Stars. But Adam, there's also some big games tonight taking place that are really going to have an impact on the Predators and the standings. And that's this time of year, you're scoreboard watching on pretty much a nightly basis.
You've got four games to watch tonight. You have the Chicago Blackhawks, who are 4 points behind the Predators all of a sudden.
Somehow.
At the Detroit Red Wings. You have the Vegas Golden Knights at the Winnipeg Jets. A huge game, perhaps the biggest, the Arizona Coyotes at the Calgary Flames.
Oh, yeah.
And then the Colorado Avalanche at the Vancouver Canucks. So all teams that the Predators are battling against, specifically the Blackhawks, Jets, Coyotes, Flames, and Canucks. So when the Predators wake up tomorrow morning to prepare for their game against the Dallas Stars, the wild card race, which is incredibly tight, is probably going to look a lot different.
Yeah.
So some of those teams are going to have to lose. The more the better for the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, I wouldn't bank on Chicago being one of those teams. I mean, the Detroit Red Wings suck.
Yeah,
they are awful. Bad. My goodness, are they bad. 35 points on the year. But I guess you really never know in today's NHL. I wouldn't have expected the Blackhawks to creep back into the race like this, but somehow they have. I think they've won 4 games in a row.
That sounds
or something
great.
Like that. So they're all of a sudden back in the race, just 4 points behind the Nashville Predators. We all know what kind of a role the Minnesota Wild have been on as of late. A loss by the Predators to the Wild earlier this week. They've creeped up to the first wild card spot. Vancouver's struggling right now, 74 points. They were at the top of the division recently. They've now slid down to the second wild card spot from the Pacific Division. But like you said, Winnipeg plays tonight, Arizona plays tonight, Chicago plays tonight, Calgary. I mean, you're going to need as many of those teams as possible to lose. And obviously two of them play each other, I believe, in Arizona and Calgary.
And you need that to not be,
you
a,
need
three
that
point
to not
game.
Be a three-point game. That's really important tonight. You need some help probably from your division mate in Colorado as they take on the Vancouver Canucks tonight at 9 o'clock as well. I mean, you're obviously probably not going to catch Colorado at this point.
No.
So they can take out Vancouver, keep them at 74 points. You've at least, if you're the Predators, got an opportunity to jump past them tomorrow as well. So a really big night tonight for the Nashville Predators in the league. And some of those games in hand that we talked about them having all season long, I mean, those are starting to disappear. You're tied with Minnesota in games played. You've played actually one more game than Vancouver has. You're just one game behind Winnipeg, which will be two after tonight. Same thing with Arizona. And Chicago has played the same amount of games. They'll be one game ahead of you after tonight. So things, both points and games in hand-wise, starting to get really tight in the Western Conference.
Yes, and the Predators have four back-to-backs left.
Yeah.
So those games will evaporate quite quickly. But a big game tomorrow against Dallas, and then four more games on the road starting Tuesday in Montreal, Thursday in Toronto, Saturday in Columbus, and next Sunday in Minnesota, another big game against the Wild. So this is a critical stretch. Every game at this point is critical.
Yeah.
But a five-game road trip, you know, this is a critical juncture for the Predators.
Adam, Philip Forsberg scored last night, as you mentioned earlier in the show, for the first time since January 30th, where I think he had two goals against the Devils.
Correct.
In that game. And it was one of those things where, like, right before it, I think Roman Josi broke in the zone. He got out wide. Forsberg was streaking to the net. Josi delivers a perfect pass, and Forsberg just flubs it. It goes wide right. And I was sitting there thinking to myself, oh, my God, like, he's never going to score again. Like, that was so wide open. Khudobin had no chance on that play, and he just missed it. And then he turns around 2 or 3 minutes later and just fires what looked like a simple wrist shot on the power play that somehow trickled its way through and found the back of the net for his 19th goal of the season. And you saw the smile on Forsberg's face after he scored that goal, almost like, oh, my goodness, thank you. Finally, it's gone in for me. We've seen throughout his career that once things start to go in for him, he can be a very streaky player. Can this be a launching pad for Philip Forsberg? I know we talk about this from a team perspective, and we're much less confident in that in terms of a launching pad. But we've seen this before from Philip Forsberg, even this year. Can this be a launching pad in terms of his offensive productivity and specifically his goal production? Can it spike from this when he starts to get some confidence and some flow offensively back into his game?
He said after the game last night that it was starting to get a bit frustrating, and it would for any player to not score in 16 consecutive games, especially a player whose primary job is to score goals. But then I asked him if he could live with the frustration if he felt like he was getting the chances. And he said something funny. He said that there was a period of time during that stretch where he didn't feel like he was playing well and that he was almost just coming in and cashing paychecks.
Yeah. Which you don't hear players say very often.
Which you don't hear players say very often. But if you look at some of his underlying numbers during that 16-game stretch, they were fine. It wasn't as if, though, he wasn't getting opportunities to score. They just weren't falling in his favor. So I think that's a positive thing in the sense that it would be one thing if he weren't scoring and you just didn't notice him. I do think that there were pockets of time in that 16-game stretch where he wasn't particularly noticeable, but there were a lot of times where he did have chances, like the one he had that you referred to when he missed before he scored, where it just went the wrong way. So we talked in the previous segment about the players that need to step up, and we talked about it last week, which two of the four players, if you had to choose two, would you choose to find their game, and we both said Philip Forsberg as one of them.
Yeah.
So it certainly looks like it could be a good thing. You're right, he was clearly relieved by scoring that goal, but it goes back to everything we've talked about. It's good that he scored last night, but now he needs to score tomorrow, and he needs to score the next game.
Yeah.
You know, he needs to continue it, but perhaps getting the proverbial monkey off his back might help in that regard.
Yeah, and John Hines talked about it a little bit after the game last night in terms of, you know, Forsberg, you feel pretty good about his game most of the time. And I think he said there was a few games, and you mentioned kind of a patch in there where Forsberg said he was basically coming in and collected paychecks in terms of how he felt like he was playing in those games. I do think most nights you watch Forsberg play, to me, effort never really is the question with him. Sometimes I think he's guilty of trying to do too much. Like, I think he's trying to, like, you know, maybe pressing a little bit, pucks aren't going in for him, and he's like, I have to go out here and I have to make a play. And you'll see him try to go 1-on-3, try to put the puck between his legs, try to make that great individual play to give himself a prime scoring opportunity. And sometimes it's just the simple play that's right there that he struggles to make. Not struggles to make from an execution standpoint, but struggles to make from a, hey, this is the route I should take on this play to try to go make that simple play instead of making things a highlight reel worthy play. And I don't think he's out there just like looking to make highlight worthy plays. I think he's just that skilled. And sometimes that's the best way he feels like he can either get the pass off, get the shot off, whatever it is. But I do think sometimes during this past stretch of 16 games before he scored last night, he had been guilty of maybe trying to do a little bit too much.
And he even said last night that his goal was not the prettiest shot in the history of the National Hockey League, but it doesn't matter.
No.
It still found its way in. Now, of course, if you're Philip Forsberg, or maybe if you're a fan of Philip Forsberg, you were hoping that he would break the drought with an insane goal,
yeah,
another lacrosse goal maybe, or something like that. But it was sort of a pinball goal that ultimately went into the net, and it counts just the same. So perhaps that helps in that mindset, Robbie, that he doesn't have to be out there dangling all the time in order to score. Sometimes it's just about taking the shot.
Yeah.
And he did it last night. And I agree with you that sometimes it's never Philip Forsberg isn't doing enough. Sometimes the problem is, as you said, he's doing too much or trying to do too much. And that can be as detrimental sometimes as not doing enough.
Yeah.
Because you'll make a play that you shouldn't make and that puts your team in trouble, or you take a chance that you shouldn't be taking. And that can end up going the other way and biting you in the rear end. So if Philip Forsberg can find that happy medium and find the game that we know he has, because he is an incredibly talented player and a skilled goal scorer, down the stretch, you know, that would help the Predators immensely.
Adam, as we wrap up here, what are you looking for out of the Preds tomorrow when they take on the Stars? I believe 1 o'clock start time tomorrow in Dallas.
Yes, 1 p.m. start here on ESPN, 102.5 The Game, pregame at noon. I would like to see them continue what they did last night and then tighten some things up. It wasn't a perfect game last night, as we previously discussed, but I do believe that the way they were attacking the game was much better. As we talked about, and as Matt Duchene was talking about after the game, they put the Stars on their heels quite a bit. They were effective off the rush. They had some good chances in tight. They made the Stars work a little bit in their offensive zone from time to time. I would like to see more of that.
Yeah.
I think last night was a good first step. I would like to see a continuation of that and an improvement upon that tomorrow against the same team.
And special teams. Like, you've got to get, yes, special teams continuing to trend in the right way. Two power play goals last night. Obviously, the power play has been a topic of conversation around here for the last 2 years, basically. They've got to continue to build on that and get that in the right way. I thought their penalty kill last night was good. You know, Corbini and Holzer, the big Holzer coming in there, playing with Jarrett Tinordi. That's a large defense pairing there on the
meaty.
Third defense. It is very meaty. As John Hines eloquently put it last night, it takes up a lot of real estate.
Yes.
It absolutely does. There's
they
no
are two
question.
Large men.
They are two large men. They did a good job on the penalty kill. Again, we don't want to overreact to one game. We've done that a few times this year. It's up to this team now to go out and prove to us that they have what it takes to build on it.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think when you take a look at the roster, I would expect UC Soros probably to go tomorrow, would be my guess.
I would
doubt
think so.
Rene goes.
He played incredibly well last night, so I would not be surprised to see UC in net again tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly feels like he's the guy that they're just going to have to ride here, unless there's back-to-backs. Like, you know, maybe Pekka gets a start here and there, but Soros is the hot hand right now. I think that's the way they're going to have to go the rest of the season. So that's going to do it for us here tonight on the Smash Brothers. We'll see how the Predators respond tomorrow in Dallas. Adam, always great to see you, my friend. You're looking dashing as ever. Thank you.
You flatter me, sir.
That's
always
what I do.
Good to see you.
We'll be back next week. Until then, everybody be well. You have been listening to the Smash Brothers with Robbie Stanley and Adam Vingan here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.